Ross Young, how you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl, how you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Yes, it is The Rider with Becco. We're back again. And last week's episode with Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins was just quite interesting to get a good 40 minutes to talk to this guy who, you know, I kind of forgot how many moments in my life that run in parallel with so many releases of the Smashing Pumpkins. And I also appreciate his honesty. At times, you could tell you were testing here with some of the questions, but he didn't shy away from talking about Courtney Love and how he'd mended that relationship. You can go back and check that out right now. Listen to it on all platforms, including Spotify. This week on The Rider, Grinspoon, they're back on the road. They've got the Easy Detention Tour, plus going to be re-releasing both albums on vinyl for the first time ever. The albums Easy and New Detention. Both albums had some incredible songs they play live. And on this tour, they're going to be playing the best of both those albums. The tour kicks off at the end of October, all the way through to Christmas. You can get all those dates through the Grinspoon website or just find him on Facebook as well. And direct from the Northern Rivers of New South Wales, from his garage, Pat Davin, Pat from Grinspoon. Hey, mate.
I find myself a nice stool over here.
Do you play in there at all, or is it just a garage built for cars?
I do own a PA, and my kids sometimes set up the PA because we've obviously got every musical instrument under the sun.
Yeah.
And they jam out. It's awful stuff, but you know, you gotta start somewhere, right?
You gotta encourage them, you know. How you going, mate? It's been a while. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too, mate. It has been a while.
You got the two albums re-released on vinyl for the first time and a tour. It's going to be great.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I mean, it seems to be the thing that you do, or that we do anyway.
Yeah.
We've got, like, we did Guide to Better Living. Now we're combining Easy and New Detention into one. And then we've got Thrills next time, and after that we're fucked. Nobody cared about those albums.
Hey, look, I'll be there for the Black Rabbits, because actually that's one of my favourite albums of yours, by the way.
Mine too, bro. Exactly. I think between you and me, we sold all the copies of that we probably did.
Well, I remember the time when Black Rabbits came out. I think Phil was doing
2013.
Yeah, and Phil was doing all, you know, the promo. I think there was the album launch at the Hollywood the night before, from memory. And
oh my god, that's where I met my wife, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. That's where we got together.
Jeez, that's insane. Yeah. That was a fun night. I remember,
oh my god, it was such a great night, dude. That was like a massive night. It was heaps of fun. Well, you were there.
Yeah.
That's funny because that's just a legendary night between my wife and I's relationship. We talk about it all the time.
That's insane. Well, years later, I met her at the bookstore because I was in Bangalore and I popped in and I said, This is your bookstore, right? And she goes, yeah, come on in, you know. And I was a big fan. I mean, the music selection there was great, but it's just a cool thing to have in Bangalore. I loved it.
Yeah, it was. It was very cool.
Back to Black Rabbits, though. I remember you said to me, or it might have been Phil as well, that said, the record company asked us to do an album that radio stations are going to play. You got your wish. And then sure enough, you know, it was a really solid album, and I think still such a polished album as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. There was back in the day when record companies still had a budget and they thought that we were worth spending it on. So obviously we went to LA, we recorded with Dave Shipman. We had the producer of our choice, studio of our choice. I think we were kind of staying and living in these kind of upscale Hollywood apartments and just having the time. Oh, Echo Park. That's where we were.
Oh, yeah.
Having the time of our lives making an album on the side. But we had some good material for that one, that's for sure. And it still stands up. And it's funny, you know, Chris Cheney from Living End was living there. Tim Rogers was living there. They came in and did like guest appearances on the record, most of the time been up all night at a bar and decided to come into the studio the next morning. We discovered this bar called the Gold Bar which you could get a dollar Pabst Blue Ribbons, like pint sort of. I was just crazy. Spent a lot of time at the Gold Bar.
I would just love to go drinking with Tim Rogers in Hollywood. I think that'd be a really interesting night. In fact, drinking with him anywhere would be an interesting night, to be honest.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, Easy and New Detention, both really bloody solid albums too. And, you know, looking back at the gigs I've been to of you guys, and I saw you guys at Spring Loaded and I saw you in Queanbeyan actually pretty recently as well down here in Canberra.
Oh, right. The Queanbeyan, it's part of the beer and barbecue festival.
The beer festival, exactly. And I still...
Down there.
I've moved here. That's my update. I'm in Canberra now.
I thought you looked cold.
Yeah, I'm cold. And in fact, that night in Queanbeyan, I was in the sound check and I've never been colder in my life. I think that was a terrible afternoon. But yeah, those songs stand up live as well, like Lost Control. Yeah. I think the greatest live song you guys do.
I think we had 5 singles off New Detention, to be honest with you. You know, like it was kind of the gift that kept on giving, really. It was a funny story. I mean, I've told it a few times before, but we were signed to Universal. We'd done, obviously, Guide to Better Living, which was a big album, you know, for a debut album. Like, you know, it was a big album for a band that they weren't expecting to sell that many records. And then we did Easy, and we kind of had free reign over doing what we did, which we love that record, which we're obviously playing a lot of choice cuts off that one on the tour. That's probably the band's favorite record. It was just a great experience, and we really believed in it. Still sold really well, but nothing compared to Guide to Better Living. And so when we came to do New Detention, we delivered our demos to our A&R guy, a guy named Peter Billing, who's no longer at Universal, but he was there for a long time. He looked after us for a long time. And he just kept sending us back into the demo studio. And we really thought, I think we'd done like 50 demos. And Phil and I were living in Sydney at the time. The other two guys were living somewhere else. And he was just like, I need more songs. I need something the radio is going to play. So him and I, and we're like, yeah, fuck you, whatever. You know what I mean? They'll play whatever they want.
Yeah.
You can't tell them what to play. So we went into a little studio, stage door in Alexandria. Chris had broken his hand, so we had a different drummer playing with us, a guy named Lee Maloney, who's Diesel's long-term drummer. And the three of us kind of went into a studio and smoked a bunch of weed, and we wrote Lost Control, Chemical Heart, and one other one in a day.
In a day.
And we went back to Peter Billing and said, what do you reckon? And he goes, I think you've got it now. So, yeah, they were those two are the kind of the last couple of tracks, and they were the first two singles off the record.
Wow. Is it funny how sometimes when you're under that pressure, and I've heard this from other artists before as well, that they've been told go back and come back with something else, and they've come back with the biggest song they've ever done, and it's just that that pressure must do it.
I think sometimes it is that pressure, you know what I mean? And it makes you, instead of being so, you know, like maybe inward about your songwriting, you kind of look out. Possibly, you know what I mean? And maybe, I don't know, that, and also the pressure, maybe you've had something, like we had a couple of those riffs, but we'd never kind of developed them into anything, and just being able to focus on trying to do something really good obviously helps.
And you know, Ready One is my pick off Easy as well. That's going to be great live. And are you doing, have you worked out yet whether you're going to mix up both albums or go first half, second half or whatever?
I think that we're going to mix it up a little bit. I mean, I think that we're going to open with some choice cuts from New Detention. Then I think we're going to go into Easy, and then we possibly make our way back out into New Detention. We just figure, you know, play one album, have a break, play another album. It's just a bit, you know, we want to try and make a real show of it. You know what I mean? It's been unbelievable, the response to the tour. Like, I think most of the shows are sold out, if not close to all of them. And we really want to put on a good show. We really try hard to bring in the best sound, the best lights, and the best material that we can, because people have got a lot of choices on what to spend their money on. So we're really grateful that they're doing it to come and see us. So instead of kind of doing that kind of same old beginning to end, we might try and weave a little magic, right?
Well, I got smart because sometimes when bands do this thing at the moment of doing a whole album, you know, there's always going to be a couple of tracks you don't really want to do live. You know, there's always two or three.
The go to the bar tracks, absolutely. Yeah. So, that's actually good. So, I mean, Well, I'm not entirely sure how long we're playing for. I think it's a 90-minute set. But we'll also, what we did the last time we did it, which was Guide to Better Living, we did the album and then we went and we did a kind of a longish encore where we played everything else, you know? So I would assume that that's going to be an idea that's floated so we can kind of trim the fat out of the albums and then at the end of the show give people what they want from, say, Guide to Better Living and obviously Thrills and Black Rabbits.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Yeah. I saw you guys pretty much right in the middle of the pandemic. Is that Spring Loaded show at Randwick? And that was
nuts. Such a weird one.
It was such a weird one.
There was like COVID in the community and then the police were there kind of peering. People weren't supposed to jump around. I remember it being a really fun gig. But I remember it being a very strange atmosphere. I almost didn't feel right playing. But I think everyone who went had a really good time.
Yeah, because we were just literally waiting for the call, you know, it's done, yeah. It's pulled, because there were those like one case or two cases in Western Sydney or something. Or
That's right. And
we were just thinking, oh, God, you know, it was we've been waiting so long for a stand-up gig. And we were just thinking, how do they get this over the line? You know, because I've been to other ones where it was outdoors but seated, and as soon as anyone stood up and started half dancing, they would stop the gig and yell at them and say, "Sit down." And
well, yeah, I mean, we did one of those gigs. We went out to Tasmania and did a show with Ocean Alley, Royal Hobart Botanic Gardens. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it is the most beautiful venue. It's like a natural amphitheater where the stage is down the bottom. The punters kind of go up the side of the hill, and now the other side, you kind of look out into the dirt and out into the ocean. And that was a seated only gig, all right? A Grinspoon gig. And I mean, Ocean Alley were there too. We got on stage. There was like a line of probably 10 security guards across the front of the barrier. First note, everyone's on their feet. The security guards just put their hands in the air. It's like, what are we going to do? And they just walked off. They just went home.
That's insane. God. Yeah. I saw Tumbleweed at a seated gig as well, and that was weird because you know how loud Tumbleweed are.
Yeah, man. Thank goodness we don't have to deal with any of that anymore.
You know, it's going to be great to see you guys on the road. And as you said, you put on a great show, and I love how, you know, you do put on the big lights and the confetti guns and all that stuff, because when you look back at the photos and you see Phil, you know, doing what Phil does – It just brings back so many great memories when you get home and look at the photos too, you know.
Yeah, we're going to have to think about what kind of pyrotechnic spectacular we're going to have to throw down on this tour. Some of the venues don't like the confetti than some of the stuff that we do, because obviously they're theatres and they don't want to have to clean up after us.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about a substitute that I think should get people pretty excited.
It's pretty insane when you think about it, because I moved to Lismore in 98, just after you guys broke, and you guys are the talk of the town, pretty much.
What were you doing there, bro?
I started working at Triple ZFM 100.9.
Oh, in Gnellabar.
And I was doing the graveyard shift midnight through to 6 a.m. and it was my first year out of home too. So I was like an 18-year-old, and I moved to Lismore, you know, half an hour away from Nimbin and Byron Bay.
Oh, yeah. Did you move up there just to get the gig?
Yeah. Yeah. I literally got the gig. I caught a Greyhound bus all the way to Lismore. There's an overnighter.
There is. Caught the Greyhound bus all the way to Gnellabar.
But seriously, you guys were the kings of Lismore. I mean, what was it like when, you know, Unearth got you and you were all over Triple J?
When we were in Lismore, like 95, we got Unearthed, and that 94, 95 period when the band started, there were so many good bands in Lismore. There was so much music going on. Every venue had bands on. There was people were coming there. I mean, that's how Phil and Chris ended up there. They just knew it was a scene, you know? Yeah. And it was a great scene. And yeah, we were all, well, I wasn't living there, but all the rest of the boys were living in a share house on Cathcart Street, right down in the flood zone. And yeah, I remember they got the call that we'd kind of won it, and it was disbelief. But that was like over 100 kind of entries, which doesn't seem like a lot these days when you think about Unearthed, but for us, what is a pretty small town that had just received national radio, that was a pretty good effort. You know, I remember we went out to some studio Bush Tracks, maybe in Nimbin, and recorded a 2-cassette demo and sent it in to Triple J. And the rest is history, my friend.
It's nuts. And you're still there. You're like, you're a Bangalore these days. Are you still around that area, Byron Bay, or where are you now?
I am. I've moved away a lot. Obviously, the band spent a fair bit of time overseas in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I was in Sydney for a long time. But I came back here 2010, I think I came back. And, family, it's great for my kids and my wife, and it's just a great place to live. And obviously, I've got a big, large network of friends from all my years living here when I was younger, and it's just nice. I mean, we just got back from Melbourne where my family is, and it's really nice to get down there. And every time we get down there, we're like, oh, wouldn't it be great to live here? And then we come home and then we're like, fuck that. We're staying right where we are.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. I think you're in paradise. I almost moved there literally a month ago. I was trying to work out how I could do it, but just
Triple Z?
No. This is a completely different job. I was looking at doing media and comms for the government, believe it or not. So,
if you can get a job for the government up here, take it.
Yeah. Right? Exactly right. Especially if you live in Byron. But you're in also, you got this other band, right? You're playing with Bernard Fanning and is it John Farris as well?
I play with Bernard. I've just did the Red Hot Summer Tour with Bernard. I'm his side man.
Right.
That was a five month tour. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, it's funny, me and Bernard have obviously known each other a long time, not as friends though in the early days. I mean, we used to call them the Australian Eagles Show, and they used to call us Diet Pantera. So I think they won on the giving us a rib steak. But then it's funny, my eldest daughter and Bernard's son ended up going to school together. And so we'd kind of see each other across the playground at drop-off time, like, nod. And then as we kind of got to know each other, we realized we had a lot more in common than we did differences, you know? And then Johnny Farris from INXS, his daughter, Ivani, was going to the same school. And so it would be like, hey, Johnny, hey, Bernie. And then a school fundraiser came about. And the principal leaned on me and Bernard and John to put a band together. And so we thought, fuck it, what we're going to do. So we just did a bunch of 70s yacht rock covers. But then me and Bernard kind of realized that we enjoyed playing with each other. And then his long-term guitar player, Andrew Morris, wasn't available for a few shows during the COVID period. And I filled in for him. And, the rest is history.
I just love how it happened by accident. That's great.
It did. I mean, me and Bern get along real well, and I enjoy playing his music. It's funny. I often think of Phil when I'm playing Sunsets, just the look on his face, if he could see me now. He hasn't been to a show. He's like, yeah, I'll come. Never comes. Never been to a show. Probably never will.
Yeah, imagine Phil seeing you, performing Powderfinger songs.
We only do a couple. We only do one, really. Bernie does a couple on his own. We only do one. The rest, he's got a lot of great material. So we've got a deep well to draw from on the Bernard Fanning stakes.
Yeah. It's quite a hotbed of sort of, musicians now, when you think you got, Pete Murray as well living, and probably, you probably hang with him a little bit, I'm guessing.
The beef curry. Occasionally, when he's not doing photo shoots for Men's Health magazine, I might see him down the street looking buff. Pete's a good guy. Yeah. I used to share a studio with Pete. Actually, we had a studio out at for many years. About 10 years ago, we shared a studio out at out in the hills, where we used to get together a fair bit and hang out. But I still see him. His daughter was at school with one of my younger son for a while there. So same thing. Drop off, pick up. How you going, Pete?
How good is Byron Bay? The people you see, bloody hell. So part of this podcast, I got to actually ask everyone, what is in your rider these days?
The Grinspoon rider.
Yeah, what is in the Grinspoon rider?
Oh, mate, I tell you what, it's a hell of a lot better than the Bernard Fanning rider, let me tell you. Do you really want me to go through
it? Yeah, go through it.
Okay, we have a bottle of Glenfiddich 16-year-old Scotch whiskey.
Nice.
A bottle of gin, which Joe drinks. I drink the Scotch. Joe drinks the Hendrick's gin. There's a bottle of vodka that's left over from the 90s. And there's a bottle of Jack Daniels, which our drummer drinks. There's a couple of cases of local beer, a couple of cases of imported beer, assorted soft drinks, food, obviously, platters, chips, nuts, the chocolates, which all the kids, because there's a lot of kids involved in our band now. So they're always at soundcheck eating all the chocolates, along with Tony Bryan, our long-serving, suffering sound guy. And a local TV celebrity.
There'd be a couple up there. Byron, for sure. some people are saying that they've learned lessons from years past and what to not put in the rider as well. Like, you know what, smelly things like anchovies or anything like that or anything garlicky.
No, you definitely don't want to do that. I mean, to be honest with you, we get all that on our rider. We only get it when we when we don't have to pay for it. If we have to pay for our own rider, there's not much on it at all. But when you occasionally do venues where they supply the rider, they get the full booklet. We toured with a band called Dub War back in the 90s. They were from, I think they were Scottish. They might have been in Glasgow. They were a heavy band. They used to open the show with a big air raid siren. And we were just kids, man. And I remember they had underwear and socks and stuff on their rider. And their tour manager was this Scottish guy, and he came into the room because we shared a band room. I think it might have been in Wollongong Uni. And he's like, "Where's the mooey?" I was like, "Oh, sorry, we don't have any mooey for you." He's like, "No mooey, no showy." Which kind of transformed into no goey, no showy, or no blowy, no showy.
Yeah.
So we've taken that one on board.
Well, the thing is, too, in those early years, it's all about survival on a long tour. So you want, new pairs of undies and socks, and you could order spirits and stretch that bottle out for maybe three shows, possibly,
I mean, riders are a funny one. We did our first ever Sydney gig was at the Time and Tide Hotel in Mona Vale, supporting a band called Juice. I don't know if you remember those guys.
No.
But they were a really big Sydney band. And then they kind of had a bit of a fall from grace, a few lineup changes. So we were doing the Time and Tide with them, and there was probably 10 people there. But they'd still had their rider, this enormous rider. And I remember the singer, Krishna, was like, "We've still got our rider, boys. Come on, we can still do this. We've still got our rider." So, it can be meaningful in more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, Pat, always great to spend time with you and get ready for the tour and also the two vinyls. Actually, I was going to ask you, being vinyl, do you have to re-engineer the music before going out, or
it got remastered? They do a lot of it at the factory, but we did get it remastered, and then we had a listening party. We did where did we play? We did a gig down in Sydney, like an off the radar gig for some people about a month ago, and me and Phil kind of went back to the hotel room, which had a record player, and we got given the vinyl that day and kind of cranked it through, and it definitely sounds different to a CD, and there's definitely something more organic about hearing the when we did those albums, it was back in the days of doing secret tracks.
Yes.
So there was on Easy in our, marijuana haze, we decided to put the secret track, 6 minutes and 66 seconds after the final track. But on the vinyl, it just comes straight in. So if you never bothered waiting around on the CD to hear the secret track, on the vinyl, it's much more accessible.
Well, that makes it a collector's item. So I'm going to go out and get that. Well, look, Pat, good luck for the road, and stay in touch, and I'll see you soon.
Beauty. Thanks, mate.
He's always such a great chat. Pat Davin for Grinspoon. And the Easy Detention Tour kicks off end of October all the way through to Christmas. And get both those albums on vinyl for the very first time. Yes, even with the secret track. Next week on The Rider, while she's been on the road with her band Magic Dirt, you might have seen her as part of the Rolling Stones review with Tim Rogers and Tex Birkin. Next week, we chat to Adelita. We'll catch you then.